Mist swirls outside the open door to a creepy room. A chair spins in midair. The door slams. A book's floating in the air and a ghostly girl lurks by a wall. A light bulb illuminates a logo like a house. BH Productions. A man stands on a rock in a storm, arms outstretched, his coattails flapping in the wind. Lightning forks and metallic letters swoop in. Intrepid Pictures. BH Productions and Intrepid Pictures present. Hush. The title appears in bold black over a wide expanse of forest. The view descends into the trees. A car is parked outside a house standing in a clearing. The view moves towards the isolated home. A ring on a stove lights, a bottle uncorked and the wine poured. An onion is sliced and an egg broken. Flour sifted, garlic crushed, and asparagus chopped. The asparagus sizzles in a pan and sauce is cooking. The oven is open to reveal racks of lamb. A recipe is being followed. The cook, a dark-haired woman in her 30s, frowns at the cookbook. The view moves around her to a close-up on her ear. For her, the kitchen is silent. She chops onions, crushes garlic, lifts the lid and stirs the sauce. She shuts the oven. She tastes the sauce and grimaces. A message comes through on the laptop with the recipe on. To Maddie Young, it's from Sarah next door. Can I stop by? Maddie replies to the ongoing conversation. Sure, cooking. Maddie moves back to the hob and adds seasoning to the sauce. Maddie stirs the sauce. Another message arrives. What are you making? Maddie tastes again and frowns. A message says, low battery. Your Mac will sleep unless plugged into a power outlet. Maddie closes the laptop and carries it from the kitchen to the living area. She places it on a sideboard and picks up her cell phone to reply to Sarah. Right now, just a mess. On the sideboard, there's a framed photo of Maddie with another smiling young woman. Maddie picks up a food bowl by the French doors, opens them, and shakes the bowl. A fluffy cat runs past Maddie, and she puts the bowl down for it. She goes to the French doors and takes out her phone. Maddie smiles as Sarah approaches up the path. A message from Sarah reads, "Don't see any flames from here anyway." Maddie grins and replies, "Not yet." Sarah, a similar age to Maddie, smiles as she reads the message. Maddie goes out onto the porch to greet her, closing the French door behind her.
I finished your book.
You don't have to sign.
I know you can read my lips, but I'm getting better. Better.
Cool.
I want to practice. Taking another class with John.
John?
It's fun. I'm way better at understanding it than actually doing it. But...
So what did you think?
What did I think? I loved it.
Thank you.
I loved Riley. I loved Aaron.
Thank you.
Great characters. I tried to guess the ending. I'm usually on point with that sort of thing, but I was way off. How did you do that? How do you come up with that?
My mom calls it writer brain. Makes me crazy. Any possible outcome is like a movie in my head. With many endings. A frustrating movie. Hard to make the voices quiet.
A voice?
I have a voice in my head.
Does the voice sound like a kid? You were 13 when you got sick.
It sounds like my mom.
Whatever is going on in your brain. I think that you are a good storyteller.
Sarah signs as she speaks.
What?
What?
This means kisser. This means storyteller.
Well, I'm sure you're also a lovely kisser.
Sarah points toward the house. A bright light is flashing along with the alarm. Maddie dashes inside. The house is full of smoke. Maddie climbs on a chair to take the alarm off the wall. Sarah goes to the oven. She takes the smoking lamb out of the oven. The cat slips out of the French doors, and Maddie takes the battery out of the alarm. Sarah runs the burnt pan under the tap. Sarah closes and switches off the smoking oven.
I'm sorry. Fire alarm.
God, that is one hell of a fire alarm.
I have to feel the vibrations. That is why it's so loud. When I am sleeping, the vibrations will wake me up.
Well, I imagine that would wake anyone.
After dark, Maddie and Sarah sit together on the porch steps.
Oh, Kat.
She's fine. Independent little bitch.
She's a what?
B-I-T-C-H.
Bitch.
Bitch.
Both make the sign and smile. Sarah taps Maddie on the leg to get her attention.
I'm sorry about dinner. Do you want to come over? We can order in and watch a movie. John will be home in an hour, so he can join.
Have to work.
I understand.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for letting me borrow this.
Keep it. I've got dozens upstairs.
Thank you. I'll pop by tomorrow and brush up signs. I'm gonna get good. I'm determined. Kissing. Storyteller. Bitch.
Maddie mirrors the signs back to Sarah, and they wave goodbye as Sarah leaves. Maddie watches her walk away down the dark path. Sarah looks back and waves again. Maddie takes her phone out of her back pocket. There's a message from Craig. Thought of you today. Maddie stares at the message, then swipes the screen to delete it. She puts the phone down on the counter in the kitchen, looks around, and heaves a sigh. Maddie trudges back to the living room. There's a family photo and copies of her book, Midnight Mass. There's a biog on the back explaining how she lost her hearing and speech through viral meningitis and complications in surgery. Lights glow in the house as it's viewed from the trees. Maddie's lying on a sofa with a laptop eating a TV dinner. She puts the food on the coffee table and stares at the computer screen. Maddie clicks on a tab for the ending two pages of her new novel, Sweetwater.
Clenching the cover of the book. Riley to the church to Aaron. The church to Father Paul, bring in Aaron last. The rage bubbled up, spreading into his head. His ears rang. His eyes felt hot.
Too sappy.
Mysterious ways.
Nope. Down. Not working. Not working. Something brighter.
Staring down with her wide, endlessly patient eyes. They twinkle with red, blue, and yellow light, just as the damned Jesus fish had when it pulled him out of the fog and into hell.
That's better. I need something more, something that's okay. Better.
Aaron dies. Can't kill Aaron. Piss him all off.
Didn't set it up properly.
Or
scrap the whole book and find another career.
A better idea.
Maddie clicks on the FaceTime icon, and her image appears on the pop-up screen. With a sigh, she types in Craig's name to contact, considers for a moment, then initiates the call. Maddie hastily ends the call, dials again, but can't go through with it. She rubs her eyes and thinks with her fingers laced together. She shuts FaceTime and rubs her face wearily as she stares at the screen. Maddie stares wide-eyed as Craig calls back and slams the laptop shut. The call continues to come through on her cell. The call registers as missed. Maddie squats to open the kitchen cupboard, which contains the garbage bin. She scrapes the unsuccessful sauce into it, then places the pan in the sink. As Maddie trashes the rest of her cooking, the kitchen door is viewed from outside.
Maddie! Maddie, please see me! Maddie, please help me!
Maddie can't hear Sarah and is concentrating on what she's doing. An arrow slams into Sarah's back, and she's attacked by a figure in a featureless white mask. As Sarah is stabbed repeatedly, Maddie has her back to the kitchen door. The creepy white mask is reflected in the glass. As Sarah goes limp in the killer's arms, the mask stares through the kitchen doors, hollow-eyed, with an unsettling half-smile. As the killer lets Sarah's body drop, he continues to stare at Maddie, who's completely unaware of what's going on. The killer taps a gloved finger on the glass of the kitchen door, then knocks with his fist. He looks around, then drags Sarah's body away. Maddie finishes tidying and notices the call coming through. She turns the phone over on the counter. The call alert light continues to flash as Maddie goes back to the sofa. She ties her hair back and opens the laptop. Maddie stares at her last unfinished sentence. Oblivious to the sounds behind her, Maddie types. Aaron realized that she was a shitty writer. And I'm going to die of old age before I publish a second novel. As she types, the killer moves behind her and draws a large hunting knife. As the killer taps the blade against his hand, Maddie types, "La la la, blah blah blah, ending stuff, the end. Money now, please." Maddie smiles to herself. The killer moves away as the call comes through from Maddie's sister, Max.
Hey, Squish.
Hey, Squash.
What are you up to?
Abandoning the novel, joining the circus.
Going that well, huh?
Maddie mimes hanging herself and shooting herself in the head.
You still stuck on the ending?
Which one? I have 7.
Glad I could distract you.
Distractions abound. Craig texted me.
Talk about bad endings. Did you talk to him?
No, but almost.
It's been a year. Mom keeps asking when you're getting back out there.
I signed up for an online dating site for the deaf.
Look at you.
No, there are 4 men in the whole area. Do not want.
Miss the city yet?
Never. Too loud.
Seriously, Maddie? Maybe you could come back. Live with me. I worry about you. It's not good for anyone to be alone, Squish. Isolating yourself the way that you do,
Isolation happened to me. I didn't pick it.
What was that? Behind you. Thought I saw something move.
Probably the cat. Bitch escaped earlier. Thank you. I have to find her.
I love you.
Maddie returns the sign and kiss, then ends the call. She sighs and smiles happily. Closing the laptop, she gets up and goes over to pick up the cat's food bowl. Maddie walks around looking for the cat. She looks under the bed and goes into the bathroom, switching on the light. Maddie wanders back to the living room and kitchen area, then goes upstairs. Her head just above the top of the spiral stairs, she looks around her darkened study at floor level. She goes back down. Maddie slides open the French door in the living room, looks out into the darkness, tenses, and rubs her arm in the chill night air. She puts the food bowl down, goes to the small dining table, and takes a jacket off the back of a chair, throwing it round her shoulders. Maddie slumps back down on the sofa and picks up her laptop, resting it on a cushion. She opens up the computer and considers the last thing she wrote. A picture message appears from Maddie's phone. She frowns. Maddie clicks on her messages. The photo is her, sitting on the sofa with a laptop. Another is Maddie in the kitchen, taken through the window blinds. Another is her walking through the house with the cat's bowl. Maddie shifts uncomfortably as another photo comes through of her as she is right now with her laptop on the sofa. She freezes and turns nervously to look over her shoulder. Maddie peers into the shadows and puts the laptop to one side. She gets slowly to her feet. Maddie very slowly approaches the French doors and sees the killer standing quite still in his permanently grinning mask. He holds up the phone. Maddie sprints to the door and locks it just before the killer can get in. They face each other through the glass. He wanders off, and Maddie locks the next set of doors. Maddie runs to the kitchen door. The killer gets there first, but the door's locked. The mask stares blankly. Then he walks away and off the porch. The killer stands staring up at the window above the kitchen sink. Maddie watches, trying to see where he might go next. Walking slowly back past the porch, he unslings his bow and rests it nonchalantly over his shoulder. Maddie moves to another window in the living room as the killer walks slowly around the house. Maddie dashes to lock another door as the blank mask looms out of the darkness. The killer wanders off again. Maddie rushes to her laptop and tries to contact 911. The killer goes to the fuse box and the lights go out. Maddie stares at her reflection on the screen, then tries to connect to John and Sarah's Wi-Fi. She pauses before entering the passcode and looks up. The blank face is at the window. The killer also clicks on John and Sarah's Wi-Fi. Sarah and the killer stare at each other. He draws his knife blade across the window. The noise makes no impression on Sarah. The killer moves away from the window. Maddie moves slowly through the dark to the French door. Outside, the killer slashes the tires on her car. With every slash, he stands and looks deliberately at Maddie, who is a pale figure at the window. Maddie looks around the dark house wide-eyed. Maddie rummages in her purse and retrieves a lip gloss. She gets a flashlight out of a drawer and goes back to the French window. She uses the lip gloss to write on the window. Maddie moves away and sits on the stairs. Maddie switches on the flashlight, illuminating her writing on the glass door. From outside, the light glows brightly in the darkness. Maddie sits and waits. The white mask looms out of the dark. She's written backwards so he can read it. Won't tell. Didn't see face. Boyfriend coming home. The killer stands from reading the message, pulls off his beanie hat, and slowly removes the mask. He's a guy about the same age as Maddie, with a short, neat beard, short hair, and staring eyes.
Can you read my lips? Can you?
Maddie nods.
You've seen it now, haven't you?
Maddie shines the light on the phrase, boyfriend coming home.
Seriously, Maddie, maybe you could come back and live with me. No, I worry about you. It's not good for anyone to be so alone, Squish. I can come in anytime I want. And I can get you anytime I want. But I'm not going to. Not until it's time. When you wish you're dead, that's when I'll come inside. Do you understand me? Nod your head, if you understand me.
Maddie nods numbly.
Good. Then we can have some fun. Enjoy it.
He moves away. He has a large tattoo on his neck. He moves off the porch and heads off around the house. Maddie clicks off the flashlight, gets up, and moves cautiously towards the kitchen window. Eyes wide with fear, Maddie takes a knife from a block, glances around, then stoops to get something from the cupboard under the sink. A hammer. Standing near the stairs, Maddie looks around warily, then goes into the bedroom. Maddie pushes a chest of drawers in front of the door. She leaps over the bed and closes the curtains. Maddie crouches between the two windows, clutching her weapons. She pulls back a curtain and peers out of a window. There's nothing but dark, empty forest. Maddie moves back, taking deep, steadying breaths. Maddie stares in fear at the bedroom door. She glances toward the window on her left, eyes widening, and shrinks back, hammer at the ready, as a shadow moves on the curtains. Maddie gets slowly to her feet as the intruder raps on the window with the back of their hand. Maddie's eyes widen in horror as she's confronted by the blood-streaked, dead features of Sarah. The killer is behind her, wrapping her hand on the window like a grisly puppet. Maddie backs away, dropping the hammer. She pushes the drawers away and backs through the door as the killer makes Sarah's hand wave bye-bye. Maddie falls backwards into the living room, dropping the knife and sobbing. Maddie slowly regains control and remembers Sarah's cell phone, which was in her back pocket. Maddie gets up and, keeping low, goes back to her purse on the kitchen counter. Maddie finds her car keys and points the fob at her car outside. Nothing happens. She gives up and crawls across the floor so she's sitting under the sink, looking towards the kitchen door. She tries the fob again, to no avail. Maddie crawls toward the kitchen door. Wide-eyed and tearful, she tries the fob again. Nothing. Looking up, frowning, she reaches for the door handle. Maddie opens the door, reaches outside, and presses the fob again. The killer looks round on hearing the noise, and Maddie swiftly ducks back inside, locking the door. Maddie looks across the living room and ducks down as the killer moves past the windows on the far side, heading for the car. With the killer distracted at the front of the house, Maddie runs through the bedroom, which looks out back. She throws open the sash window, leans out, and fumbles in Sarah's jeans pocket for her phone. The killer breaks into the car with his elbow. As Maddie keeps searching for the phone, the killer appears around the corner. He runs at her as Maddie frantically wriggles back inside. She brings the window down hard on his fingers. They struggle, with him trying to lift the window back up and Maddie keep it shut. She looks around and spots the hammer lying on the floor. Maddie dives for the hammer and lashes out. He staggers back with the claw embedded in his forearm. Maddie slams and locks the window. The killer examines the ugly wound in his arm, then stares murderously up at Maddie in the window. He picks up his knife, goes over to Sarah's body, and starts to cut away her check shirt as Maddie keeps watching at the window. He wraps the makeshift bandage around his wound. He looks up at Maddie in open-mouthed curiosity, looks at the body, then back to Maddie. He twigs and takes Sarah's phone out of his pocket, holding it up for Maddie to see. Maddie's shoulders slump, and the killer approaches the window with a triumphant sneer. He taps the phone on the glass, then backs up and places it on Sarah's body. He goes to her head and removes one of Sarah's earrings. Maddie cranes to see what he's doing. The killer holds the earring up and admires his trophy. Maddie turns her back as the killer approaches the window to gloat, banging in frustration on the glass as he's unable to get her attention. Maddie leaves the bedroom, closing the door behind her, then sobs, pressing her hands to her forehead. Maddie crouches down as she spots the killer walking past the kitchen window toward the front of the house. As she watches, he keeps walking, past the porch, and on around the house. Maddie watches the killer continue around the house, and dashes toward the French doors. She stands with her back pressed against the wall beside it, and looks out towards the kitchen window. Maddie sinks down as the killer passes the window above the sink. She pushes herself back upright and looks to her left towards the French door. The killer comes to the door and peers in. Maddie can just see him, but he can't see her and walks away. Maddie inches across to look out as the killer walks around the house again. Maddie dashes across the French door to the wall on the other side. The killer passes the far window on his way to the back of the house. Maddie slides the door open and backs out onto the porch. She crosses the wood decking, glancing around nervously. She goes down the steps and heads off in the same direction as the killer. Maddie nearly gets spotted as she rounds a corner just before the killer rounds the next one. He comes back down the steps from the back door and returns the way he came, walking right past Maddie, who's hiding under the porch. Killer walks across the porch right above Maddie's head. Maddie places a hand on the underside of the planking to try and figure out where he is from the vibrations of his footsteps. Standing almost directly above Maddie, the killer looks out into the forest with a frown. She looks up through a gap in the planking and clamps a hand over her mouth. The killer glances down, looks around, then goes down the steps, turning left at the bottom to go anti-clockwise around the house, past the kitchen. Maddie watches the guy's feet walk around the porch, then crawls out to the other side, braces herself, then sprints for the trees. An arrow slams into a tree just ahead of her, and Maddie lurches to a halt. The guy starts to string another arrow, and Maddie makes a dash for the house. She throws herself inside and slides the door closed. An arrow thuds into the woodwork, and Maddie sprawls on the floor. Maddie scrambles back to the stairs as the killer approaches across the porch. He retrieves his arrow and grins as he taps it against the glass. As Maddie glares at him, the killer hefts his bow onto his shoulder and walks away. Without looking, he casually points the bow back in Maddie's direction as he walks off. Maddie wearily slides herself backwards up the stairs on her backside, looks up, then turns and runs up. She looks out of a window. Below, the killer slides another arrow into his crossbow. The killer heads off towards the back of the house, and Maddie crosses the upper floor to another set of windows overlooking the rear. The guy passes below, strolling along quite calmly and casually cradling his bow. Maddie crawls across the floor to a low partition where she can look downstairs. The killer's standing at the back door. Maddie goes back to the rear windows and cranks one open. She climbs out clutching a flashlight. Exiting backwards, Maddie lowers herself down onto a roof above the back porch and moves carefully along it. As Maddie stares tensely, the killer moves away from the house. Maddie stands and moves quietly to the opposite end of the roof. She clicks on the flashlight, cupping her hand over the beam, then throws it far out into the trees. Hearing the noise, the killer hurries to investigate the light flickering in the trees. Maddie gets to her feet and moves off along the roof in the other direction, walking carefully along the guttering. Above the back door, she lowers herself down. An arrow hits Maddie in the back of the thigh. In agony, she hauls herself back on the roof as the killer loads another arrow. The killer lets fly as Maddie peers over the edge and she falls backwards. The killer looks up at the roof uncertainly and slings his bow over his shoulder. As he goes to investigate, climbing a trellis, Maddie pulls the arrow out of her leg. Clutching her bleeding leg, Maddie rolls in agony as the killer climbs higher. On her knees, Maddie waits as the guy appears over the parapet and unslings his bow. She grabs it, punches him in the face, and he falls to the ground. Maddie tries to shoot the bow, but the killer launches himself back at the trellis. Clamping an arrow between her teeth, Maddie takes the bow and staggers away along the roof. Maddie throws the bow and arrow in through the window and climbs in as the killer closes in. Maddie cranks the window shut just before the killer throws himself against it. Maddie picks up the bow and aims it at him. He stares in with a look of surprise, sneers, then bangs his forehead against the glass. As the killer moves along the windows, Maddie keeps the bow trained on him. He goes. And she doubles over in pain from her injured leg. She touches the wound, and her hand comes away bloody. Maddie limps downstairs, locks herself in the bathroom, and takes the sash from a bathrobe. Maddie unzips her jacket, shrugs it off, and reaches behind her to open a cupboard by the toilet. She takes out a bottle of disinfectant. Maddie lies down to take off her jeans. She eases them down to reveal an open, bleeding wound. Maddie clamps the sash between her teeth and pours the clear liquid into the wound. Writhing in agony, she slaps the floor. Maddie takes the sash out of her mouth, lies down, and pulls her jeans back up. Maddie fastens her jeans and wraps the sash around her leg as a tourniquet. Maddie throws back her head in a silent scream as she tightens the tourniquet. She rocks backwards and forwards, weeping silently. She runs her hands through her hair, shoulders heaving as she sobs. Maddie picks up the bow and examines it with a frown. There's a tally scratched on the side. One single mark, two sets of five, and then another two. Maddie puts her hands to her mouth, trying to stay calm. Maddie tries to slot an arrow into the bow, but the tension on the string is so high, she can't pull it back and hurts her fingers. Maddie tries again, grimaces in frustration, then puts her foot in the stirrup at the end of the bow to get better purchase. The killer's looking in the window. Maddie hurts her fingers again.
Not so easy, is it?
Another man's knocking on the kitchen door.
Sarah?
As Maddie weeps in frustration and pain, Sarah's husband, John, tries the living room door.
Sarah!
John tries the door, but it's locked. He looks around in frustration, then notices Maddie's lipstick message, and with a frown, takes out his phone.
On the ground! I said, on the ground,
hey, no,
drop
hey.
It!
No, it's just a
drop
phone.
It.
I was just gonna call
the
cops. Hands
behind your head.
Okay.
On your knees.
Okay, take it easy, man.
Hands where I can see him.
I'm a friend.
I don't want any trouble.
Listen.
Just do what I say,
all
right?
My name is John Stanley.
I said, on your knees,
okay,
sir.
Okay. I'm a neighbor, okay? I was just coming here to look for my girlfriend.
All right, show me some ID.
It's in my wallet, okay? Take it easy.
Hands where I can see him, nice
I'm
and
I'm just
slow,
gonna go
right?
for my wallet, all right? I'm gonna put my phone down, reach for my wallet, okay? Take it easy.
John, in the glare of a flashlight, keeps his eyes on the killer as he reaches for his wallet and hands it over. The killer directs the flashlight at the ID, and John frowns as he gets a look at the man.
You live next door?
Yes, sir. Okay.
Okay. I am sorry to scare you. There has been him. Whew. Jesus.
What the hell happened here?
I don't know. I responded to a call. I got here, I found the place like this. There was someone inside. He came running past me, knocked me cold. I woke up without my phone, my gun, or my radio. I need to call for backup. Do you know who lives here?
Yeah, it's Maddie. Maddie Young. She's a friend of ours.
Yeah, she live alone?
Yeah, my girlfriend comes here all over the time. I thought maybe she was
What's
watching
her name?
A movie. It's Sarah Green.
Okay, sir, I'm sorry. Can I use your phone? Call for backup? I should have called it in when I first got here, but I just started this job, and when I got here, the house was
you
all...
Police?
Deputy. Just barely, though. I can call the sheriff. I can just use your...
John picks up his phone.
Here you go. All right. Thanks.
John studies the killer and his blood-soaked arm with a suspicious frown.
Yeah, I got a 719 here at 811 Fairhope. Signs of possible forced entry. Suspect is at large on foot. No one else here, but a neighbor just showed up. Yeah. Okay. See you soon.
Hey, did you see that?
The killer shines the flashlight on Maddie's message.
Yeah, he did. So this girl, Maddie, does she have a boyfriend?
No, I don't think so.
Family nearby? Anybody else that could have possibly have access to the house?
She pretty much keeps to herself. Your arm okay?
Oh, yeah. Guy just plowed into me. Hit me like a truck. Must have been just about your size. Actually, you know, like a jock. Linebacker type. Scary guy.
Can I get that back? Phone?
Oh.
The killer put the phone in his pocket.
Yeah, of course.
Man, sorry.
So stupid of me.
Of course, it happens.
As the killer takes out the phone to hand it back, Sarah's earring falls out of his pocket. John notices and his frown deepens.
You said you responded to a call. Was that from Maddie?
From dispatcher, actually. They said someone had called it in. I just assumed it was a resident.
Yeah, because she wouldn't be able to make that call. She's deaf and mute.
Huh.
John stares as the killer thinks.
Well, I guess it must have been your girlfriend then made the call.
John stares at the killer in disbelief. Maddie tries again to draw back the bowstring, grimacing with the effort. Maddie clutches her sore fingers, gives up, pressing her hands to her eyes and collapses sobbing. John eyes the killer coldly.
So deaf mute, huh? Pretty rough. She always been unable to hear?
No, not always. Since she was a teenager, I think, some meningitis.
The killer nods thoughtfully, looks up at the trees.
Still, to live alone like this, must be able to get by.
Yeah, you know, I can't swear to it, but... Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure she has a spare key in that planter on the corner of the porch down there.
God, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Just a...
Yeah, no, it's right down there on that corner. So who do you think it was? Like a burglar? God, I hope it wasn't something worse.
I'm sure they're fine. If they called it in, they probably got the hell out of here.
Trashed her car pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah, look at that. Jeez.
John picks up a large rock from a planter.
So how long do you think it'll take for the cavalry to arrive?
Well, 10, 15 maybe.
Really?
I'm glad you happened to cross me when you did. Could have been stuck out here bleeding all night.
Yeah, I'm glad I came by.
In here, you said?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure.
The killer bends down to look in the planter. John looks up to see Maddie hammering on the French door, and the killer stabs him in the neck. Maddie's eyes widen in shock.
Easy. Easy. Hey. No, it's done. It's done.
Blood pouring from his neck, John lunges at the killer, who sidesteps and slashes his leg. Maddie watches helplessly as John kneels, with blood pouring from the neck wound.
See, I figured I had about a, 2 in 10 chance. It came to a fight. You're just so damn big. I'm actually pretty glad she showed up when she did. Thank you.
John's collapsed, and blood pools on the leafy ground.
Shh, it's okay.
John leaps up and tackles the killer. Maddie frantically tries again to draw the bow. John gets on the killer's back as he crawls for the knife and rolls him over in a wrestling stranglehold. Maddie watches from the living room. John hangs on grimly, and the killer's legs shake. Maddie limps to the back door, looks out toward the trees, then goes outside, descending the back steps. As Maddie limps for the tree line, the killer charges up and smashes around the head with a rock. He kneels astride Maddie, and blood sprays as he pounds her head. Grins, breathing heavily. Maddie's eyes suddenly open.
You can't run.
staring into the woods, Maddie lets go of the door handle and retreats back into the house. John's strength gives out, and the killer gasps, hauling in air. Maddie drops to her knees.
You can't outrun him on that leg.
I can't outrun him on that leg.
Take down the crossbow, but that has to be a perfect shot. In the heart or in the brain.
Heart or the brain.
Anything else is not going to cut it.
Won't cut it.
And that's a long-distance weapon.
That's a long-distance weapon.
It's pretty much useless indoors. It's useless really indoors. Tough up close, and you'd have to be up close to land a kill shot. He'll be moving. Can't even figure out how to load the damn thing.
Get the power back on.
Go outside, get the power back on. I don't know if you flip the switch or cut the wires.
She imagines the killer grabbing her while outside.
Hiding. Bedroom, bathroom, loft. There are windows in each. All he needs is a rock. Loft doesn't have any cover, no doors to barricade. In best case scenario, he doesn't find you and you bleed to death.
I could hide outside.
Go back outside.
Crawl space. I've tried that once.
He knows you already tried that once. There's not a lot of room to maneuver. He figures out you're there.
She's dragged from under the porch.
He figures out I'm there.
And I don't think you last that long.
I'm cold.
I'm dizzy. And you're sweaty. Fingernails are turning blue and your vision's starting to go. We are running out of time. How long before you can't even walk or stand up or see? Sooner or later, he is coming in here.
He knows I'm bleeding out.
Once he is in this house, it is over. He is bigger, stronger, and faster. And he's got the advantage.
He has the advantage.
He can hear you.
I can't run.
I can't hide. And we can't wait. You go outside, you are dead. Too many endings. Which means there's only one ending he won't expect. He can't run, hide, or wait. What does that leave?
The vision of herself giving advice and her frown fade.
Kill him.
The killer takes John's watch and sits cross-legged by the body.
Yeah. I never would have won that fight.
He stuffs the watch in his pocket and pats John down.
Oh, John. These things will kill you, you know.
He's found a pack of cigarettes. The killer takes a wheel wrench from the trunk of Maddie's car. He sits on the hood and puts a cigarette in his mouth, looking down at the body on the ground.
What do you think, John? Should I go in there, get this over with?
He lights up and nods thoughtfully.
Yeah, you're probably right. Should wait a little while longer. Till she's lost some more blood. I don't want to tempt a shot. In case her aim's any better than her judgment. Oh, hey there.
He goes up to the fluffy cat and places a gloved hand on its neck.
Hey. Huh? Is this your house?
Does your mommy live there? Let's check.
The cat's collar has the name Bitch, along with Maddie's name and contact number.
Welcome home, puss. Oh, it's okay. You're gonna see mommy very soon.
He draws his knife.
Or at least she'll see you. Nailed to the front.
An arrow hits him in the shoulder. He gets up, pulls it out, and Maddie rushes back inside. She drops an arrow, reaches out to get it, and the killer slams the French door on her wrist. The killer stamps on Maddie's wrist. Maddie slowly draws her smashed hand inside, shuts, and locks the sliding door. The killer stands looking down at her curiously, his head tilted to one side. She sobs, rolling in agony, cradling the shattered wrist. The killer crouches down, staring at Maddie, picks up the arrow, snaps it in two, and drops it.
Coming in.
Maddie stops sobbing and looks up at him quite calmly. Maddie rolls over, gets up, eyeballing the killer with cold hate. She dips a finger in the blood-soaked tourniquet on her leg and writes on the glass. The killer leans back to read the message. Do it. She punches the door to get his attention and stares coldly. She jabs her finger back in the wound. She writes one word, coward. Their eyes lock and the killer walks away. Maddie hobbles into the living room and goes to her laptop. The killer fetches the wheel wrench. Maddie types, male, 5'9", green eyes. As the killer attacks the door with the wrench, she continues. Tattoo on side of neck. Love you, Mom. Dad. Max. Died fighting. She shuts the laptop. Maddie picks up the knife she dropped, hobbles into the bedroom, and locks the door. The killer stands in front of the cracked door, but hasn't managed to shatter the glass. Maddie goes through to the bathroom and locks that door. Maddie sits on the floor at the end of the bathtub, wincing in pain. She holds the knife out in front of her and watches the door. Her vision starts to blur. Maddie's eyes grow heavy, and she focuses grimly, forcing her eyes open as they close and her vision clouds. She's unable to hear the killer come through the window behind her and lower himself into the bathtub.
You know what? I think that you're holding out on me. I bet if I hit the right spot, I can make you scream.
Maddie feels his breath on the back of her neck. In slow motion, she flips the knife around in her hand. She whirls around as he strikes so his blade passes over her shoulder, and she stabs him hard in the thigh. The killer drops his blade, and Maddie scrambles out of the bathroom. She unlocks the bedroom door and staggers out into the living room. Maddie looks into the kitchen, and her vision blurs again. She lurches to the counter. Supporting herself on the counter, Maddie moves slowly toward the sink and the knife block. She collapses. Slumped against the cupboard under the sink, she glances up toward the knife block. Her head lolls, and her damaged hand drops limply by her side. The killer limps out of the bedroom, grimacing in rage and pain. He finds Maddie sprawled unconscious in the kitchen and closes in. Maddie comes to and stares up at him.
You fucking cunt.
Maddie sprays wasp and hornet killer in his eyes. He stumbles around, hands pressed to his face. Maddie gets up, and as he lashes out, switches on the fire alarm on the counter. Maddie thrusts the bright flashing light toward him. He clamps his hands over his ears and drops the knife. He falls against the sideboard, and the corkscrew falls on the floor. Maddie bends down to pick up the knife, but the killer grabs her by the hair and throws her on the ground. He kicks her and straddles her. Maddie bites his hand. He pulls free and slaps her. The killer clamps his hands around Maddie's throat. She tries to grab his clothing, his face, but can't get a hold. She reaches out with her good hand, just missing the corkscrew. He tightens his grip and slams Maddie's head against the wood floor. As Maddie's heart slows, images flash of her family and childhood. Maddie's fingertips reach the corkscrew. Maddie rams the corkscrew right through his neck. His blood sprays across her face. He clamps his hand to one side, but blood pumps in jets from the hole in the other side. The killer slumps on top of Maddie, then rolls off. She twists herself to look at him, lies back, and stares at the ceiling. Maddie blinks, choking as she starts to breathe again. Gagging, she sits up, stares at the dead killer, and takes a phone out of his pocket. Maddie dials 911. Maddie collapses as the call goes through and lies next to the dead killer, illuminated by the flashing light of the fire alarm. Sarah's body is draped over the air conditioning unit below the bedroom window. John lies on his back among the leaves out front. Viewed from outside, the dark house is lit up by the brightly flashing alarm. Maddie emerges onto the porch, limping, but alive. Maddie stares out at the dark forest and slowly sinks down to sit on the porch steps. Maddie looks down at Bitch, sitting calmly beside her, and strokes the fluffy cat. As she stares out expressionlessly into the woods, the lights of police cruisers appear through the trees. Maddie sits with her eyes closed as the police car approaches. Her face spattered with blood, a smile slowly spreads across her features. Cut to black. Directed by Mike Flanagan. Written by Mike Flanagan and Kate Siegel. Produced by Trevor Macy, PGA, and Jason Bloom. Executive producers Michael J. Fortique Sr., Kate Lumpkin, Cooper Samuelson, Jeanette Brill. Director of Photography, James Neist. Edited by Mike Flanagan. Costume designer, Lynn Peltzman. Production designer, Elizabeth Baller. Music by the Newton Brothers. Casting by Anne McCarthy and Kelly Roy. John Gallagher Jr. Michael Trucco. Samantha Sloyan. And introducing Kate Siegel, an Intrepid Pictures production, a Blumhouse production, a Mike Flanagan film. Unit production manager Kate Lumpkin, first assistant director James Grayford, associate producer Melinda Nishioka. The cast. John Gallagher Jr. as the man. Kate Siegel as Maddie. Michael Trucco as John. Samantha Sloyan as Sarah. Emma Graves as Max. Copyright 2014, Silence Productions, California, LLC. The story, characters, and events depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to places, buildings, actual persons living or dead, or to actual events is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and all other countries throughout the world. All rights reserved. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this film, or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal penalties. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws. And unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Further credits continue to scroll. We'll be right back. subscription for Netflix by VSI, written and voiced by Roland Byrne. The end.